This is for all you lovers out there. Dance.
History is gonna change.
All right, Futurism Friday number 3. This is Kevin Sullivan, host of the program, and with us is Savannah Steele, as always. Savannah,
hello.
You there?
Howdy.
That song was Time Machine by Pogo, and I always use his music because it's really cool. If you want to check it out, go to Pogo. Now, I screw this up every time, don't I? Pogomix.net. That's Pogomix.net. His stuff is really cool. This one is like Back to the Future sort of mix and stuff. And sometimes I leave with the Pogo Trump song, which, you know, might alienate me from half my audience. But it's just a cool song, so that's why I put it on. And I think it's kind of funny. So that's that. Oh, and do you know what? I didn't... Hold on. Let me play your intro music. So actually, I introduced you wrong. Let me try it again.
Uh-oh. What's that weird thing on your nose, by the way?
Because you're on Skype. No, I mean Hangouts. You can't hear the music bed in the background, but I just put on your Huey Lewis intro song there.
Awesome.
That is a Breathe Right strip.
You look like, yeah, that's interesting. Why? That's, yeah. Most people, don't they wear those like to go to bed or something?
They do. I treat Breathe Right strips kind of like a treat because they're so expensive.
Really?
And this nose has been busted so many times that, sometimes it's hard to breathe. No reason. Kara has a cold and I was like, here, use a Breathe Right strip. And then I thought, man, I'd like a Breathe Right strip right now. So I throw it on there and it's like a Breathe Right is not a sponsor, but it's still like removing your nose and just breathing through like a big hole. Have you ever used one?
No, I haven't.
Oh, really?
So, maybe I need to try one, but I'm sure I have all kinds of breathing issues.
They're just awesome. They're really cool. They're not cool, actually. Sometimes I just talk through my ass. They're not cool. If you walk down the street wearing one, it's just not cool. So what? I'm going to start paying attention to what I say. You know, that filler stuff is just bullshit. So hold on. Let me pull up I'm trying to find. Do you have video up yet, or am I just listening to you?
I don't know if I can do video.
Try it. Hit the video button.
Here we go. Yeah, I apologize.
All right.
I look terribly. I hope is this going up like on like.
No, this isn't. No, this is this is just audio. And it's wonderful banter. People have already stopped listening. So Futurism Friday. So we are actually going to do Futurism Friday today. We each got some topics to discuss. And I was hoping if I could start this time, because I was listening to Joe Rogan and Chris Ryan on the way home. Did you hear that one?
Really? No, I just ignored it because I thought it looked lame.
No,
but now I'm downloading it.
Chris Ryan is really cool. He's a bit of a psychonaut.
Really?
Psychologist. He wrote a book called Sex at Dawn, which is actually really good.
And yes, I listened to that one. I forgot his name, but I know that guy.
Yeah, Dr. Chris Ryan. Anyways, he brought up something that I thought was really cool. So he said that humans... if we try to figure out what our place is in the world right now, or maybe in the future, you know, a lot of people are talking about, are we going to see the end? Are you holding a chicken?
No, it's just a weird looking dog, but she's getting a little aggressive. So I decided to pick her up so she doesn't beat up Roger. Sorry. She please continue.
Like, is that a whippet?
I think she's some sort of weird, don't tell Eric, slightly obese Italian Greyhound.
She is a little chunky. That's why I thought she was a chicken. She looks just like a chicken. I think it's it looks like a whippet. A whippet's like a little mini, I'm probably saying it wrong. It's not the nitrous
maybe,
oxide.
Yeah, Italian, I think they are also whippets. I think they're also known to be, like the Italian greyhounds, I think they're whippets.
Yeah. Greyhounds are very, very like, they love their people, and so they freak out when their people aren't around. They're
that's what's happening right now.
Very much pack animals. So he had mentioned something, and I thought it was a really cool way. So everyone's saying, like, is this the end of the organic human beings or whatever that, you know, is this the end of our, of who we are now? And are we going through some sort of, microevolution or even, macroevolution, with machines? And I was thinking about that. And what he had mentioned is that perhaps we can look at ourselves now as almost like symbiotic organisms. So look at where organisms were, 3 billion years ago, when mm-hmm. they think mitochondria in a cell were maybe their own sort of organism, or what else? What are the parts of a cell are there? I know mitochondria are in there. There's all sorts of different things floating around. I should know this, but
the nucleus.
Well, yeah, there's a nucleus, and then there's like a bunch.
Golgi apparatus.
Yeah, the Golgi apparatus. These were all different. They think there's a theory that they were all individual types of organisms, and then they eventually just kind of melted together, merged together, and came up with single cell organisms, and then from there. So he had mentioned that we are kind of the same thing. Right now, we're all individual organisms, and we make technology, right? This is our thing. Like, bacteria make stuff. They make, byproducts, and those byproducts have a use in the environment.
Like monoclonal antibodies?
Yeah. but they...
Well, we use bacteria to make all kinds of...
insulin.
All kinds of functional things.
Yeah, we make, make insulin.
Insulin, and cancer drugs, yeah.
So,
please continue.
Right now, we're making technology. That's our thing, right? That's pretty much all we're making. I mean, we're burning dinosaurs to drive around, and we're making technology, right? And then he thinks that so eventually, obviously, they're going to merge together or stem off into their own, almost like the Skynet. They're going to become their own individual autonomous things, and they're really not going to look back at us. Because do you wake up in the morning and are you happy about the single cell organisms that were around 3 billion years ago? Did you give a shit about them? No.
I lament their loss daily.
Exactly, right? So you don't think about it, so they're just going to move on. I don't know. What do you think? Yeah. What say you on that theory?
I don't understand where he's going with that. I mean, he's saying that someday we're just going to be sort of like the mitochondria of some sort of advanced species.
Sure, yeah. And not even someday, I'm sure, like very soon.
Right, like next week.
Yeah.
I guess. So he's suggesting that we might merge with technology, or is he just saying we're just going to continue to... evolve.
Our job, our job as little organisms here on this planet is to just churn out technology, and eventually technology is going to become autonomous, and maybe we'll merge with it, maybe that'll be part of it, or maybe it will just kind of take off without us. But our job here in the grand evolution, in the grand scheme of history, is to do that. That's our place in time right now.
How did I completely miss that whole conversation? Because I'm pretty sure I listened to this podcast.
Oh, really? Yeah, I thought when he said it, what do you call that? What's that saying I'm looking for? It rang true to things I've been thinking about.
Mm.
Like, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say,
what
do you think
me that, about it? Yeah.
Goddamn Google Hangouts! It's so hard to do a podcast when you're like, because there's like a 2 second delay. Not even, there's like a half a second delay, but it's enough that you miss cues and all that. But it's no big deal. Go ahead, you say what you're going to say.
I was going to say, I guess it doesn't really fit in with the sort of the history, the background they gave, because I mean, a technological advancement, it's sort of branching off. I mean, it's not really, I mean, all the advancements you talk about are biological and sort of, for lack of a better word, natural.
Right.
So this technological breaking off, it's hard for me to kind of conceive of how that's going to work in the end. So I think we're going to kind of merge.
So you're saying that it doesn't fall in line with, so if we look at evolution and how we got to where we are, it's not the same process as making technology, but I would say it is, because technology is an adaptation that we are we're making, though. We're creating. I mean, does everything have to be or have to come through mutations? Can't it just come from, you know, maybe that is a mutation. We have brains now, and our mutation is exogenous. And for the listeners, well, it's from the outside.
We're getting to a point where we are going to be very, very easily, in my opinion. I think we're going to get to a point where we are able to manipulate genes pretty easily through the use of technology.
And oh, we already are. Yeah.
Would be a purely organic form of evolution if we're able to just kind of snip and add genes.
This week alone, a couple of scientists, I think I sent you the link. I'm not sure if I did or not, but this week alone, some of the top scientists in gene editing just basically gave the approval, or I don't know if they can do that, but they said, yes, we're going to move forward with splicing out, say, cystic fibrosis, or we're going to move forward with splicing out different diseases. And that's kind of how it starts.
For newborns, or just like working with presumably newborns, I guess?
What yeah, were you I would say with, yeah, maybe even fetuses. I don't know.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Where do you think there's a dark side to that? Do you think it'll eventually go to the, you know, we don't want short babies, we want tall babies, we don't want weak babies, we want strong babies?
Yeah. I mean, I think eventually that we could get to that point, but that being used as an argument against splicing out muscular dystrophy is ridiculous. I mean, let's just at least move forward and keep children from having to grow up with, you know, a debilitating illness.
Yeah. I think it's a no-brainer. I don't think there should even be debate about it.
Yeah.
Cause it just makes
I agree.
Sense.
But now, like, I've got this, I somehow continue to change the way I view the world. And I look at people who have had major hardships and have somehow almost used the hardship to generate a life that's amazing, well beyond what I have. And I sometimes think, why do I think I know the best way to be born? What if the best way for me to have been born would have been, you know, with some sort of strange, well, actually, I think I...
Strange. Yeah,
yeah, no, I understand what you're... I think I was already born with that.
Well, it builds character, and it allows you to overcome adversity, and that is something that's important. And if we have just a bunch of perfect babies around, they won't have to have overcome adversity. Did you see Gattaca?
Yes, I love that movie.
I know. It's worth another watch, I think. I'm going to have to watch it again soon. But they run into this, right? Because everyone is genetically spliced together, or everyone is perfect, right? They had two groups of people that were perfectly genetic, genetically perfected. And then there was another group, which they called love children or love babies, and they were made the old-fashioned way. And he wants to be an astronaut.
Astronaut, yeah.
And his genes, I mean, there's supposed to be no, like, I mean, it makes sense to me in the future that you'll be able to just, you know, brush something over someone's keyboard, if they even use keyboards then, but and take the gene or genetic material and easily run a quick scan and see how they're going to be, you know, do they have this gene? Are they going to have heart disease? And in his case, he had heart disease and it disqualified him, even though it technically wasn't legal. So to be able to go in there and take out, we'll just use cystic fibrosis, to ease the suffering of children, yes, it would make sense and it's a no-brainer. But then someone has to step in and someone has to say, okay, but we can't use this to...
make everyone tall and beautiful and perfect and...
Yeah, we still need ugly babies.
Well, that's interesting. Does someone have to step in for that? Like, what if we all... That's a tough choice. I'm kind of reminded of the fact that the first thing that pops in my mind is the fact that in America, I feel like I would go to a conference like ASCO and all the people who were
a what?
ASCO, I'm sorry, it was an oncology camp conference, one of the major oncology conferences.
Sure.
And people would present important data, important research and major advancements that they'd been working on. And consistently, like, this is an American conference. It's American Society of Clinical Oncology. So it's American conference. Consistently, people had serious accents. So almost no one who was presenting, I shouldn't say almost no one, but very few people were presenting who were American. And it just made me kind of think, I feel like we are too fat and happy. We don't have adversity. And so we're just fat, happy, and listless. And we're not making advancements. And so I kind of come back to this whole thing where maybe it's good to have some sort of challenge in life, even though I don't want them myself.
Right. It definitely would be odd to have people that, I don't know, that's a weird ethical discussion. I mean, where do you go? Do you say that the child born without legs,
murder it. I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Oh, that's God terrible. Damn. That's horrible. I'm not even going to edit that out. I'm just going to have everyone send hate mail to you. All right. Her email address is, no, I'll edit that out. 1543. Jeez Louise, you got some like dark shit in there, right?
That was a joke.
I know,
damn it.
I know. I totally lost train of thought here because of your eugenic statements here. You know what I'll do? Actually, I'll beep it out.
You're the one who said eugenics.
I said what?
You're the one who said eugenics.
Oh, I mean, that's...
I just said... I know.
All right. Well, anyways, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I do know that it would be, and it will be. I mean, these aren't pipe dreams anymore. We know what the technology is there. It will be a good thing. And if we don't step in and regulate, or if we do step in and say, you can't use it for cosmetic reasons, then, you know, the North Koreans will. You know, they'll make super babies. Mm-hmm. You can run fast. Or somebody will, and then we're just going to fall behind. So I don't know, maybe the next generation of kids are all going to be fast and gorgeous and disease free, which I guess is fine. Why not?
They might be, but, and I wonder, so it goes back to, like, we think we know everything about the genome.
Oh, God,
and I mean, yes, we can certainly recognize, okay, this gene will lead to Huntington's disease. So we know that, and we know that if we cut it out, it will cut out Huntington's.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know what we don't know. And so who knows, like, what if we were to kind of start editing and splicing, and what if we were to find something completely wholly unexpected? So for example, you know, we've had all of these interesting advancements that we've made in agriculture in the US, and I know this isn't proven, but one might speculate that now we're seeing a lot of obesity and a lot of strange what's the word, disorders.
And
these are kind of unprecedented
disorders. Well, I think it's all, I don't know, I think it's sugar. I don't think it's the genetically modified food. But again,
well, no, it's the availability. So,
oh, sure, yeah.
I won't argue the GMO thing. I don't know about that, but I could easily make an argument for, you have these highly cheap, easy calories,
mm-hmm.
With very little nutrition.
Right.
And who knows what that does? Like, they say that what your grandmother ate can affect your genes, how you were born.
Right.
And so we've been eating this way since what? 50s, 60s, 70s, I don't know when it really started.
Yeah,
I assume
it was right around then.
Before I was born. Yeah, and now we're seeing, you know, kids that have these disorders that we're like, what? Where does this come from?
Kids have diabetes, you know, type 2 diabetes in a child. I mean, that used to be like, that'd be like a 4-year-old coming in and being like, oh, he's got, you know, coronary artery disease or something like that. You know, it just makes no sense for children to have type 2 diabetes. And it is, it's because of, so yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, Through advancements, we've made all this very easily accessible food, easy to overconsume, and, you know, look
and
at
we
the
thought it was great.
Right.
We use our technology and we're like, yes, what could possibly go wrong?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. So if you have a bunch of healthy people, I don't know what the outcome of that would be.
They don't have those disorders, but who knows what else they might have? Who knows what... Like, maybe you have Huntington's or you carry that gene, and who knows what else, maybe it confers some sort of strength in some other region. Like, we don't really know. Maybe Huntington's is a bad example.
No, it makes sense. I picture if people are able to genetically modify their own children, I just picture an entire world made of Brazilians.
Giselle Bündchen.
Because our Brazilians, aren't they like the most beautiful people in the world?
Yeah.
Giselle Bündchen's disorder.
They are.
That's all I have to say about that.
So what I sometimes I wonder though, like the only thing I wouldn't want to happen, like I like obviously I've been arguing sort of semi in the favor of some sort of regulation. Mm-hmm. But what I don't agree with is when I feel like people want to regulate so that they don't get sort of left behind. So, I mean, whenever I think about kids growing up and being like extremely smart and beautiful and faster and everything better, I do kind of feel slightly insecure about me, but that would never be a good reason. Like I, because I have that feeling, I recognize that other human beings probably have that.
Right.
And some of them don't feel like I automatically am like ashamed. I shouldn't feel that way. I should allow, you know, other people to have amazing lives. That if that's a possibility, they should have that.
Right. So you're going to say you'd be jealous. You'd be genetically jealous.
It's total. I think it's complete jealousy. Yes. Hmm. I think it is. Like, does that sound terrible? Am I too old for that? I probably am. But anyway, that's how I am.
Right.
And so then it makes me think that other people, like people in regulatory type positions, I worry that they would let that get the best of them and make regulations just because they want to keep other people down. That I don't agree with.
Well,
sorry, it's a little bit political, I guess.
No, it's fine. And I don't think you are too old, because what if they can alter, I don't know how they would do it, but if they can alter your genes within your body, but you got, how many cells are in your body? I don't know, like 40 or 50? Hashtag guy. Hashtag guy who can't estimate anything. No, you got a ton of cells. So let's say you could 40 or 50. Yeah, I was, you could take out, a bad gene. How is that supposed to, how does that go throughout your entire body? It would only make sense to me as a child, and then the child's slowly developing, so you take it out. I don't know. I just don't understand that. But there's, a lot of that I don't quite get. Maybe it will work. Even like stem cells, I don't get how you can take that and just inject it into a spot and it fixes it. I mean, to me, I don't know. I feel like we're going off on somewhere. I wanted to bring something up, though. You said that you feel like you're going to be too old for this sort of thing, right? Right? Like it's passed us by.
I meant I felt badly that I feel like the feelings that I had, like sort of envy of like people who were going to, like the next generation that's going to be coming up, even though that generation, I just felt, right. I feel like I'm too old to kind of feel envy of that. But you're right. No, I actually think that I think some of these stem cell regeneration techniques are going to be available to me. I'm hoping that I won't have to age at some point, like in the next 10 years.
Well,
Ray
Kurzweil just came out, I think it was this week or last week. He said that by 2030, he expects nanobots or nanotechnology to be able to repair our brain, or, our brains, basically. Eliminate dementia, eliminate, any sort of brain disease. That's 12 years away, 13 years away from now. Isn't that crazy?
That's insane. It's insane.
Yeah. And yes. They did a thing. If you look at all his predictions, he has an 86% prediction rate of getting it right. And that's getting it right on time. If you say get it right, but off by like a decade, it goes up to like 95% or something. The dude knows what's coming around the corner. For the listeners, if you're just like, I want to know like what's the technology that's coming up, just read anything by Ray Kurzweil and you're almost guaranteed. I mean, you go to Vegas and I tell you have an 86% chance of winning something, you're going to bet on that color. Same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll be able to tell you what's around the corner as far as that goes.
Yeah, he was posting stuff about Watson a long time ago, about Watson learning how to treat people with cancer a long time. He posted that probably in, 2011, 2012. So that's why I've been following it, because I'm like, I'm sure this is going to turn into something. And it's consistently improved. So, yeah.
What? Oh, go ahead.
I do want to say, so he says by 2030, but we're in this... I think he would even agree with me that we're in a sort of that period of time when the acceleration really is accelerating. So we're really getting an accelerated rate of return, and therefore it's getting more and more difficult to pinpoint the moment when these advancements will happen.
Right.
And I think recently, so for a while he was saying, I wish I could remember that AI would probably come on online, I don't know, 2028 or something like that. And then, but I remember hearing, reading maybe a year ago, he was kind of, you know, he's obviously always paying attention to this, and he saw that things might be advancing a little bit more quickly than that. So some of these AI advancements that he was predicting for maybe later might happen a little bit sooner. Hopefully that's also the case with the stem cell, because I don't want to wait 13 years.
It's funny how you bring that up, because I was just thinking in the back of my mind, like, can he keep his track record up without, you know, does he keep in mind, or does he take in account the exponential growth of technology? I mean, I suppose he does, but can you even predict that? I mean, is it possible to start? So back in 1990, he could make a prediction to 2000, but nowadays, like, yeah, I think it makes it really, really, because, you know, 10 years of advancement between 1990 and 2000 is like 2 years of advancement today.
Exactly.
And is that something that I don't know. He might be able pinpoint. To.
No, I think even he would say, yeah, you can't pinpoint that. And that's part of the reason he calls it the singularity.
Yeah.
Because at some point he's like, yeah, I really can't pinpoint that. That's going to be the singularity.
There's so many
advances are happening faster than we can handle it.
There's so many naysayers about that too, and I don't think, I mean, it just makes sense that that's where we're going. I mean, everything we've just talked about is all about technology and our symbiotic relationship with it, which, I mean, I guess it's not the exact right term, because we're creating it, but we're also, you know, we work with each other. You know, technology and humans go hand in hand now. And it's only, I mean, it's not just a science fiction. It's inevitable. It's inevitable that there will be a singularity where humans and technology become one.
So what do you think about when, and I know we're going to have an episode dedicated to this, I hope, soon, especially, and in my head, I have envisioned that we're going to get Graham Hancock on this actual show.
That would be awesome.
But I can keep wishing.
We're going to do ayahuasca and do a show. That would be great.
And then imagine that Graham Hancock is there. But what do you think about him saying, I mean, he talks about how, the myth is that, you know, things got too, people sort of were too, and I don't remember the term used, like maybe materialistic, maybe too technological, maybe just too removed from sort of the natural roots. And then he says, God, you know, struck the world, and who knows what that that could mean many things, obviously. But so doesn't that
paraphrase a little bit? So you're saying that we became too what? Focused?
Yeah. Well, good question. I need to go back and read it again. I just was reading it two nights ago, but something like, you get the impression that human beings became too. The theory, what led to the flood is, you know, that humanity was perhaps too far removed from its spiritual roots or whatever. I mean, in a way, the analogy to where we are going today, where we're just sort of more and more relying on technology and less on sort of
each other.
I don't know.
So yeah, are you saying if we lose our organic spiritual self that God will strike us down?
No, I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm just saying that there's evidence to suggest that at some point a major cataclysm occurred.
Right.
And so that could have been caused by a huge number of things. And the first thing that pops into, like, so if I'm going to be my skeptical self, then I would say, we destroyed ourselves. We got so far advanced, and it just takes one person, you know, with a nuclear bomb or one person with some sort of terrible biological weapon to completely wipe out the planet.
So you're saying we're
so that's the atheist in me. Mm-hmm. And then the more spiritual side is like, who knows? Like, we still don't know what we don't know about the spiritual. So perhaps when human beings just remove ourselves from our nature, from, you know, our roots, perhaps, you know, it leads to God sending a giant comet to the earth.
Is it using agnosticism for that? It's absolutely, I mean, you can say that, yeah, that's a possibility. It absolutely is a possibility. For people who say, that's why atheists kind of drive me nuts a little bit because it's too, I think anyone that puts an exclamation point or a period, I don't know, some sort of thing at the end of your sentence on their belief, you're totally just shutting everything out. You're totally just, there's no way you can be 100% sure. And atheists are always 100% sure that there's no God. And it's like, I mean, we don't know that. I mean, what are, just take some DMT and you'll come back and I guarantee you won't be an atheist anymore.
Atheist.
Now that doesn't mean you're gonna, sign up for a specific sect of religion. That part's a little wonky where everyone kind of has their own ideas. But I think it's just the way that humans do it. I don't know. So you're saying is we may run into the possibility that we won't get that far.
The apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's always kind of on the back of my mind.
Fermi paradox.
I hate to say it.
The Fermi paradox.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. How come if, you know, space is so large and time is so, I mean, you can't even comprehend how much time the universe has existed. Like it's not even a number. It's so large. During that time, I mean, all it takes is one fragment of that time, not even a grain of sand off a beach, that you could have a civilization where humans evolve, you know, just like us, and and come up with the technology. And if that's the case, where are they, you know?
Exactly.
Let me just pause it here for a quick second here. Yeah, so I mean, it absolutely is a possibility. And the other possibility is that some asshole like Kim Il-jung, whatever his name is, they're going they'll kill us all, or the asteroid's going to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens.
Either
happens all the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, not all the time, but yeah, enough times to make me worry.
So that's a lovely thing to think about. Yeah, and I get freaked out because I have kids, and I'm like, I don't know if this is going to stick around. But I guess if we all go out together, what's the big deal? And who knows what's on the other side? So maybe it's just another party.
Exactly. That's the other thing. I'm like, what? But that's what confuses me, because so many religious people get very sad when they lose loved ones. And so why do we get so sad? I mean, you can say we miss them, but at the same time, this person is like going to heaven, like you should think.
It's the same sadness that like you would have if your, a family member was moving to Spain for 3 years. You're happy for them, but you're not going to see them for 3 years. So
yeah,
I think that, I mean, it could be that, or you might never see him again. I don't know. And that's the big, that's the big thing. I have a question. I was thinking about this, I don't remember. It was just in my head here. But do you think that we will eventually have droids that look very human-like, that act very human-like? So if you have that, do you think people will fall in love with them? Do you think it's possible? I mean, we trick monkeys into running to a fake. Did you ever see that? They did the experiment where they scared a monkey, and it ran to like a fake parent. So that it was, it was a way to like, I don't remember what the experiment was for really, but I mean, they basically, just to scare the shit out of monkeys. I propose we scare monkeys. Why? Because it's fucking awesome. No, but I mean, like if we can trick monkeys, which genetically, you know, what's bizarre? Mm-hmm. Genetically, we're closer to monkeys than African elephants are to Indian elephants.
What?
Yeah. And that's by monkeys, I mean chimpanzees. Yeah.
Wow.
So anyways, that's an aside there, but I mean, if we can trick them, then technically, if you program it to have all the human emotions, if you program it to plead or to cry or to, but it really, there's nothing in there. It's just spitting out sounds that sound like voices, and it's acting the way it's been programmed to act. I mean, if you can't differentiate it by talking to it, even though there's no soul there, it's not actually feeling this. It's just acting the way you could people. And I think they could, but is it love? I mean, technically it would be the same thing as falling in love with your laptop. Or your phone.
I guess my question would be, what I don't know is if you can actually program that sort of, because I mean, there's a will that comes with being human. I mean, we have incentives. I'm trying to figure this out. I probably haven't given this enough thought to be speaking, but I'm thinking that if you can actually program that into a computer, your robot.
Yeah.
Then yeah, you could trick a human into falling in love with it, even though the human's aware of the fact that it's just programmed to behave this way.
Yeah. So it's not really.
But I think it would be like the movie Her, where because my AI boyfriend is so much, I mean, he would be infinitely better than me in all ways.
Mm-hmm.
He would probably get bored with me and want to go with some other AI.
But chick. It didn't. In that, he wasn't bored. It was just. Her job, I mean, it's like an iOS, right? Your iOS and whatever you're using isn't specifically for you. It's for everyone. And like Siri, like if let's say you had a conversation with Siri and you fall in love with the voice and everything, and you're like, oh, just like on Her, what he didn't realize, because he's like, oh, are there other people that you're seeing? She's like, yeah, like 50,000, because she that's her job. Right? And you call it Her, but that's its job. Its job is to interact and to serve people. And to trick you into thinking, just because that's what humans like, to thinking that it has a consciousness. But really, it's just algorithms pumping out, you know, what we're saying. I mean, could you kill it? Like, let's say they made a dog. Let's say they made an AI dog that has all the actions that a dog has.
You couldn't kill
it. I know. We're genetically, I mean, that's just, it's a thing about our species, not being able to hurt something that's vulnerable. But if it's not a dog, you could technically kill it, right? And have no guilt.
Ugh. I mean,
it would
have
be the
no
same.
Guilt?
Yeah, it would be the same thing as putting a bullet through your computer, right?
Yeah.
It would, you know, just because it's wrapped up in a package to look like something and to manipulate
and act like something.
And what?
And act like
something.
Yeah. It's not just, it doesn't look just look at it. It also has the characteristics,
doesn't,
behaviors that we
doesn't
look for,
mean it's something. You kind of like. get the same idea if you look at a really beautiful statue, right? If you look at it, your brain kind of says, okay, there's the head, there's the eyes, you know, you walk around back, you kind of orient yourself around where this thing is. But then if you just say to yourself, it's just a rock. It's just a rock. It's just it's been manipulated to look like a human, but it's not a human. That nose isn't a nose. The eyes aren't an eyes. The lips aren't lips. That's rock. And it's just, it's tricking us into thinking that that is a human figure. But the feet are no different.
Well, I don't understand. So what's the point that you're making?
The point I'm making is, okay. I guess the point I'm making is human emotion to synthetic beings. Is there, so I guess I don't know the point I'm making. I'm just saying maybe we'd run into some issues there, right? Because you could have, well, a couple problems. One, you could have an outlet for psychopaths to hurt something that doesn't feel, or you're going to become attached to things that aren't real, just like you would a truck. I mean, like you wouldn't a truck or a computer or your phone. I guess Westworld is kind of like this, because those they're not people. They're just machines. And the big part of but they don't. Well, in that show, they do. They start to develop it, right? Because he puts that.
Really?
He puts the ability. Have you seen Westworld yet?
I saw the first three episodes, and it looked like the main girl, the main character, Evan Rachel Wood, seemed mm-hmm. like she had absolutely feelings.
But that's the exact point, though. I guess that's the point I'm making, is that you can program it. And actually, if you see the show, when they sit down these androids and they like, you know, troubleshoot them and everything, they'll come in with all their emotion. Then they'll say, turn off affect. And then they start, they just, their face goes, you know, deadpan, and then they just talk. And it's exactly the same thing. I don't know. I guess that was kind of a long tangent. I don't remember what made me think of it, but I was thinking, yeah, could you trick a human into loving it, truly loving a piece of plastic?
Robot.
Yeah, a piece of plastic. And that's a bizarre thing. Humans. Have you seen Humans, the TV show?
No.
It's another good one. It's British, so they have, man, BBC has a lot of good TV shows. They do a great job. You said you've been reading too many books?
I said I'm too busy reading books.
Oh, so. That's good for you. You know what? I hate it when people make you feel dumb for watching TV. Because I love it. I love turning my brain off. I'm like, sweet. I'm just watching. I'm just started Fargo. The second season of that is pretty good. Let me ask you one more thing. Now that we're talking about emotions and interaction with I guess computers or whatever. So I used to be into taking photographs. I love taking photographs. The problem was I didn't have a lot of time for it. If you go, actually, you probably don't realize that. If you look around my house, all the pictures I've taken, unless they're paintings or whatever. But then cameras are now everywhere. Cameras are in your phone, and anyone can take a pretty damn good photograph. It went from
hurts my feelings because all my pictures always suck. Like, I cannot take a good picture, and I've got the top. Like, it doesn't matter what my phone is. But sorry, I didn't mean to interject.
No, it's okay. That's part of the point. But what I was going to say is a 16-year-old who's sitting there snapping pictures of herself at the beach and does 500 of them to get that perfect shot is going to have the perfect shot. So there's a reason I'm bringing this up. If a computer generates something beautiful, or if it allows people to generate something beautiful without the skill and without the time, what does that art become? Is it art anymore? Because to me, art is more than just a painting. Art means that someone has put something into it. So if, let's say, a computer creates a Rembrandt, something like a Rembrandt.
Exactly what you're saying.
Just beautiful. Yeah. And you look at it, is it art? Or is it just a bunch of freaking colors thrown together that it's not art? See, to me, that even though it looks exactly the same, even if they did identical paintings and you wouldn't be able to tell which one is which, I would have to say that the one that is synthetically created, I guess that's the word I'm looking, artificially created, would not be art. What say you?
Oh, that's a crazy question. I think I would have to disagree for the same reason that I think I would fall in love with an AI robot. As long as it sort of gives me the same emotion, the same feeling, then I'm not going to let the sort of background behind it get me down. Cause really right now we don't know that this isn't, like, everything isn't already synthetic and artificial. Like, this dog could be some bot that was just created by some sort of crazy organization that,
we could be the Matrix.
Yeah. We could be in the Matrix. So all of it could be fake anyway. So
right. But
I'm going to still enjoy my art, and I'm going to still fall in love with my robot husband.
I don't know. My take on it would have to be there is that you have to have the emotion and the skill to call it art. So the 16-year-old girl who takes 45 freaking million pictures of herself and then finally gets one that you're like, wow, that's really good. There's no skill there. Yeah. It's just because she's got the right filters and, you know, half these things just, you know, the cameras on your phones just do everything for you. I'm not going to call that photography. I'll call it, you have a selfie, you have a picture of yourself, but it's not photography. Now that isn't to say that someone could go with their cell phone, who is a photographer, knows how to, like, frame in a picture and... I don't know, you're driving down the road and there's a big accident and you get out because you work for a paper or something and you snap a photo using the technology within your phone, but now you have someone with the skill and now there's something there. I don't know, the intangible things that make art art.
Yeah. I disagree. I think I disagree with you. I think I would like to, I get it. It's frustrating to believe that these capabilities will fall into the hands of people who haven't earned it who haven't earned it. However, yeah. I, as somebody who loves having lots of music to listen to, lots of art to enjoy, I'm going to appreciate all of it. I'm not going to give a shit where it came from.
Now, how about, let's take it to this level. Let's say that you can, at some point, because of nanotechnology, upload information to your brain. And now you upload medical school in, 30 seconds. Are you a doctor?
Yes.
But yes, you don't have you don't have the time. Like, so a doctor, being a doctor is an art. You know, you have to touch the patient and talk to the patient, and you learn ways to talk with the patient. And, you know, even if you have that and it's synthetic, you know, you haven't done the time. So, I mean, yeah, I guess technically you're a doctor, but I don't know.
It depends on how good the simulation is. So let's say they were actually able to follow enough doctors or learn from enough doctors that they were able to upload that quality that you talk about. That comes only from a doctor spending lots of time with their patients.
Right.
And if I'm able to upload that as well, even though it took me 10 minutes, I'm going to go around and
10 minutes.
Ask for $500,000 a year.
10 minutes. What's your internet provider? Hey, speaking of doctors, when you hear a funny story. So people wouldn't realize this, that yes. I'm very socially awkward, right? Only because I think too much. So I know it sounds weird, but it's true. Like I'll go to have a conversation with someone and I'll look at who they are and I'll start making assumptions. And then, you know, so I'm not just standing there staring at them. I also engage in conversation. But then I try too hard not to like offend or get something wrong. So here's an example. I was laughing to myself today. A couple weeks ago this happened. So I walk in a room, young lady is in there and she's got some neck pain. So I go over, and usually with neck pain, you know, I'll palpate the muscles of the neck and I try to look for trigger points and things like that. And I find a trigger point and I'm starting to push on it.
In the neck?
Yeah, on the back of your neck, along your trapezius. And the paraspinal muscles, you can actually find really really painful trigger points, and you have to really get in there and you can release them. It's actually documented. They took biopsies of the material that's in a trigger point, and it shows high levels of like inflammation. And it's basically like, let's say you have, it's like a mini muscle spasm that inhibits circulation through that area. So a muscle is now spasming. Is that, yeah, I guess that's how you say it. And it's coming up with, or it's creating waste products, but the blood flow to that area is poor. So the waste products build up and almost become scar-like. And if there's, so you have a little piece of muscle that's doing that. And if there's a nerve going through there, then it's putting pressure on the nerve and it can cause headaches and it can cause all sorts of issues. So to fix that, you find the pressure point and you just mash it, really. That's one of the best ways to do it. I'll sometimes inject them with lidocaine and just make them kind of just relax that way. It works really well, or use a steroid. So she's black, and there's a point to that in the story. Because I try to, so when I have a patient, whether she, let's say it's an old Jewish lady, or I try to talk with people with the understanding of whatever their culture is. So yeah. It's just, I don't know, it's just something I do, right? And I'm behind her neck, and I find this trigger point. I push on it. She's like, "Oh, that hurts. It hurts a lot." I'm like, "Yeah, you know, what you have to do is kind of bring blood flow to the area by really working this out. See how I'm doing this." And I know she had a child about a year ago, and because I'm always asking her about her child, and so I say, "Now this is where now this all happens within like 2 or 3 seconds," and I'm also talking with her, so I'm thinking,
"Yeah,
I'm thinking, what if she's not married? What if she's, because right, what I'm about to say is, have your husband do this at home." But I don't want to assume that she has a husband. And I guess I could have said that. A normal person would have just said it and she wouldn't have thought anything about it. But because I'm neurotic, I start thinking, well, what if it isn't her husband? What if it's just her boyfriend? And I don't know. Should I say boyfriend? What if it's a girlfriend? I have no idea. So as I'm saying this, the thoughts are going through my head, like, what would she call a significant other? And I'm like, I can't say baby daddy. But by this point, I have to say something because it has to come out. So I go and I start massaging this little spot and I go, "Let daddy do this." And I was like, "What the hell did I just say? Let daddy rub this spot on your neck?" Because, so do you see how it led up to that?
Oh, yes. Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
And it was so weird, and I started to sweat because I'm like, "Oh my gosh, she just picked up on that." I'm like, let daddy do this. What?
That's so Best story ever.
Yeah, these things happen all the time. I was in Butner, which is a maximum security federal institution. And this is when I was in school, and I'm treating a guy, a Hispanic gentleman, who is a known cartel. Like, this guy is a badass cartel. He's got the face tattoos and he's got everything. He's about 40 years old. This guy's a killer, right? And I'm sitting across from him at a table, and I'm treating him, I was just doing like a checkup or something like that. That was my job as a student at the time. So I'm sitting there, and then he starts talking to me, and he's like, "You know, I'm trying to get a sympathetic release or something like that. Like, I can't remember what it's called, but you can get out of prison if you're going to die."
Yeah.
And
he's
like, "I'm going to get the sympathetic." I can't remember the name of it, so I'm using the wrong word. And he's like, "You know, I want to see my family because I'm going to die." And I'm scared shitless of this guy, and I don't want to piss him off. So in my head, I'm like, "Yeah, try to get on his side. Try to get on his side." And you know me, I'm not very religious at all. And I'm like, "Let's try to get on his side." And then he's like, "And I hope they give it to me." And then he sits there quietly, and he's staring at me. And I'm sitting there, and I go, "I'll pray for you." And then he closes his eyes and brings up his hands like he's going to pray. And I'm like, "Does he want me to pray for him now?" Shit. So then I pull my hands up slowly and I start pretending to pray.
No.
I didn't know what to do. I was stuck with this guy and we're sitting across the table from each other, and he's praying because he's Catholic. He's Mexican. A lot of them are Catholics, and he's got like the rosary bead tattoo. And I'm sitting there with my hands in like this awkward prayer stance with my eyes closed. I'm like, "How long? What if someone sees me? I can't be sitting here praying with some cartelli." And then I got up and I left. And then for the rest of my time there, he'd like look over at me at the prison, because they kind of just had this area they could walk around, and he kind of just nod like, "Hey man, you and I we're together, man. We're the shit." Yeah. So
that's amazing.
Those are my two little stories of how I try not to offend people. which is weird, because I think most of the stuff I say is offensive. But yeah, and then I end up just backing myself into a strange, awkward corner and don't know how to get out of it. And awesome. With that, so this Friday, Futurism Friday, went a little long, but it's okay. I think we had some good conversation. I just chatted that whole time and I used all my notes. Did you have anything really like spectacular you wanted to bring up?
Let's hold off on that till the next show. I do have something to say about AI, but I feel like we've done good here.
All right.
We gotta end it off your stories, actually. Yeah. I feel like those were perfect.
Whew. I should have more stories. Like, I'm just gonna start telling all my stories like that. Because
that was amazing.
There's a lot. Thanks. Thanks. All right. Well, you can check out our show at waitwhatif.com. You can go to Twitter, we're at WWI Podcast. Actually, you know what? Just go to waitwhatif.com. Everything's there. And that's it. Anything to say?
Nope, I mean, nothing to add to that.
All right, cool. Take care, Savannah.
Bye.
To lead by an egg, big, fat love, find common ground to halt the spread of lies. And we must do it, big, fat love, find common ground to halt the spread of lies. And any
America first, America first,
non-fatal. We want to build a much better,
believable
people,
and we must do it non-fatal.